Welcome to Smashing the Plateau. We help you get unstuck so you can do what you love and get paid what you're worth. I'm your host, David Schreiner Khan.
Out of feed, out of mind. It's like you have to show up in people's feed consistently. And if you do, and if you do so with brand design elements that are incredibly consistent so people can start recognizing you visually as you show up, then it will eventually build your business.
Today on episode 417 of Smashing the Plateau, I'm here with Philip Van Dusen, the founder and chief creative officer of Verhaal Brand Design. I'm going to ask Philip about the biggest branding mistakes small businesses make, how to overcome the fear of investing in branding, how he built consistent, stable revenue for his branding business, and much more. We've produced over 400 episodes of plateau-smashing discussions with top business leaders. We want to hear from you. Send me your questions and comments directly. That's david@smashingtheplateau.com. Thank you for taking the time to listen to our show. Remember to subscribe on whatever platform you listen on and leave a review if you can. Now let's welcome Philip Van Dusen. Philip has helped Fortune 100 companies and entrepreneurs alike create and revitalize brands, identities, websites, and launch new products for over 20 years. He has served as VP of Design of Global Snacks at PepsiCo, VP of Design at Old Navy, and Executive Creative Director for the global branding agencies Landor Associates and Anthem Worldwide. Philip is currently the founder and CCO of Verhaal Brand Design, which specializes in strategic brand development, graphic design, and marketing. His YouTube channel, where he shares his insights, trends, and expertise, has over 125,000 subscribers. His Brand Muse newsletter is considered one of the top industry publications in the branding arena. Philip, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much, David. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, it's great to have you back on. So, Philip, you've been a top corporate executive, and now you're a widely followed branding expert. What do you see as the difference between being an internal change agent and an external change agent?
Well, having been on both sides of the equation, so when you're in the agency life or marketing life, there is the client side, which is the corporate side, and then there's the agency side. And I've been, you know, as an executive on both sides of that equation. And having my own agency now, which is a consultancy, a virtual agency, is considerably different than kind of the larger corporate arena that I was revolving in before. And they're really two sides of a coin. I mean, when you're an internal marketer, you are looking for agency partners on the outside who can help you achieve your goals for the company that you're working for, the products or services that you're selling. When you're on the agency side, you are really looking to be, you know, a partner to help and assist your clients to be successful. So your success as an agency is gauged by the success of your clients. So the headset of those kind of two sides of the coin are a little different. But from, you know, from where I stood as a strategic brander, you know, a designer and a leader of creative people, that is very similar. So in some cases, I was leading internal creative teams to develop design and marketing and graphic products for sale. And, you know, you're leading creative people. You are working with internal stakeholders who are essentially internal clients. And then on the agency side, I was leading creative teams and photo studios and, you know, web developers and illustrators to service the needs of my external corporate clients. So from my standpoint and what I do in my career, I can be on, you know, two sides of that coin, but what I do for the most part is pretty similar. It's just a question of who I'm doing it for.
Right. So in all these cases, it's partnership and leading a team that are really key.
Yeah, and serving your client. And your client can be internal. So like when I was at Old Navy, I ran the the graphic product division, the textile design division, the trend division, and we serviced internal clients. So the heads of design and product development for men's apparel, boys' apparel, girls' apparel. So I had, you know, 6 or 8 large internal clients. And when I'm in the agency world, my clients are, you know, external corporations like, you know, PepsiCo and Chevron and Coca-Cola and Safeway. So you are, to a certain extent, servicing and making happy your clients no matter what you're doing. It's just a question of whether they're internal or external.
Okay. And speaking of happiness, what makes Philip happy? What made you decide to launch VearHow?
One of the things I've, you know, learned in my corporate agency life is there is, you know, a very cerebral and strategic way of going about building brands. And the clients that I've done that for and the agencies that I've worked with have been, you know, big entities working with, you know, as I said, the PepsiCos and the Chevrons and the GEs and the Safeways of the world. And they can afford to spend, you know, $250,000, $500,000, $1 million for strategic work to launch a brand or for design work to launch a brand or a new product. And, you know, as I started to get more involved in the entrepreneurial community, I realized that a lot of that strategic thought process and acumen and methodology can be used and scaled down for small to medium-sized businesses. So we're talking businesses that are 100 million or less or 10 million or less, and also solopreneurs and entrepreneurs. I can put some of the work and the thinking and the processes that I used to use for giant corporate clients into the hands of entrepreneurs and solopreneurs and small businesses who can really benefit from that and can really benefit their brands and really benefit the goods and services and products that they deliver to their clients. So in going and starting my own consultancy, I really focused on the smaller, comparatively smaller end of the spectrum and scaling down that methodology so I could bring it to those clients and really, really impact their businesses in a big way with, you know, processes and approaches that have heretofore only been accessible or affordable by giant corporate clients.
Yeah. So what's a really common mistake that you see small to mid-size companies making?
I think the biggest mistake that I see is that, you know, people think that they can go on Fiverr and design a logo and pick a color palette and throw a WordPress website up and the world's going to beat a path to their door because they think they're offering a, you know, a product or a service that is fantastic. And what happens is, you know, people will start with a particular set of brand, you know, brand pieces. So they might have a logo or they might have a color palette and they'll put up a website and it will look a certain way and will communicate a certain way. And then they may start, you know, a podcast and they may do a artwork that's a little different from that, or they may communicate in a slightly different way, or they may be serving a slightly different customer. And so as they grow their business and get involved and appear in more brand touch points, as I call them, so places that their brand appears, their brand becomes fractured. It starts to look different across channels. It sacrifices recognizability as you come across that brand in a different channel. It may not look consistent. It may not communicate in a consistent way. It may talk too much about them and not enough about the needs of their customer. And so that's a big one, is brands being built without any kind of real investment or forethought. And what happens is people spend a lot of time building a lot of things, and then they find out that, you know, the cats have gotten out of the bag, and it's actually end up being more costly and more of a, you know, time intensive effort to clean it up and to make it consistent than it would have been if they'd just taken a breath and made a financial investment and done it right in the first place. So that's one big piece. I would say the second big piece is communication. And that really is based more in strategy. So that's developing a brand positioning statement or a mission around your brand that, you know, nails down, you know, the main tenets of what it is you're doing. So the name of your brand, who you're going to be servicing, what you're going to be offering them, how is that different than your competitors? How is it better than your competitors? And kind of codifying those elements of what it is that you're going to be delivering with your business in a very, very specific way. And that's some of that strategic work that I was talking about that, you know, we've done for, I've done for big corporations. That kind of strategy thinking and planning up front is so critical because it affects what your brand design is. It affects how you communicate and copy on your website. You know, it affects all of your product and service decisions about what you're offering, where you're offering it, how you're going to communicate what you're offering. And it also affects how you're going to compete in the marketplace. So how are you going to differentiate yourself from your competitors? How are you going to communicate that you're better than they are? So these are just two aspects. One is, you know, as I said, kind of brand design focused around, and the other is around communications and strategy.
Right, right. So that there's consistent recognizability around your solution and communication that solidifies that your solution is the best one for your ideal customer.
Yeah, absolutely. And if I had a headline, I think the biggest thing that I see a lot of is small businesses and entrepreneurs have a tendency to talk about themselves a lot. You know, I do this, I'm great at this, this is what I offer. And I'm a big, big proponent of consumer-centric communication. So when a customer comes to your website, they have a problem they want solved. And if you talk to them in a way that you can state their problem to them, state the thing that you're going to offer, which is going to solve that problem, and why what you're doing is different than everybody else and why it's better, but you do it in a way that you're communicating to them and leading them through a customer journey, through a thought process that takes them from how they're framing that question or that problem in their own head to the solution that you offer. That's really how you need to, that's how you draw customers in. That's how you make sales. That's how you get new clients. And a lot of people have a tendency to just kind of crow about themselves, and it's all outward facing communication rather than communications that's meant to draw in.
Yeah, I've certainly seen that way too often, especially with small to mid-sized businesses, that the focus of the language is on the solution provider as opposed to the solution recipient.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and the other thing that I found is I think it's really hard for a business to do a great job at articulating that customer-centered language themselves, because they can't see it from the perspective of the customer. As hard as they try, they're inside themselves. They're not sitting where the customer is. And somebody who is in an outside role like you mm-hmm. can see it much more easily, in addition to obviously all of your experience doing this.
Right, right. And that is the biggest unlock for a lot of my clients, is that they need that the unbiased perspective and that more 30,000 foot view on what it is they're doing. Because, you know, people get so, so close to their brands and what they do and their communication that they don't see it. And, you know, a lot of times when I'm engaged, I will swoop in and make kind of very broad observations that are real eye-openers for my clients, because they haven't been able to see through how it is they've been doing things. And that's why clients engage outside agencies and strategists in order to help them figure out what it is that they're doing, because they can't see it themselves. They can't do it for themselves. They need someone who's got some, you know, a broad spectrum of experience behind them and who is also not married to the brand that they're working on, because that's the only way that you can really get in and move things around.
Yeah, no, this is certainly very important. So, Philip, how do you think a small to mid-sized business owner can overcome the fear that investing in someone to help with branding can be affordable and is a worthwhile investment?
There's this great quote by the CEO of Jaguar. I'm forgetting his name right now, but he said, "If you think good design is expensive, you should see the cost of bad design." And it's very true in the fact that any investment, whatever it is that you can afford, I encourage people to push their envelope at the beginning to get as fully flushed a group of brand assets as they can get. So that's, you know, font choices, photography style, color palette style, patterns or textures, logos, alternate logos, you know, portraits of themselves that are very high quality and go along with their brand attributes. Those sorts of things, when you're just starting off, if you put together a brand in a very kind of piecemeal way, those aspects of it will not line up over time, and you will have to do them all over again. The dangerous part of not making that investment in the beginning is, as your brand gets wider and proliferates and gets on more platforms and you have more visual assets out there, going back and changing them all and doing new artwork for them all is very time consuming, and it's even more expensive than actually just doing it right in the first place. So you have to think about what you might be spending down the road, changing your artwork on 5 different platforms. And this is not even mentioning all the content that you're going to be putting out there. You know, if you're doing videos, if you're doing, you know, Instagram posts, if you're doing podcasts, the thumbnail artwork, all that sort of stuff, when eventually you get your act together, you're going to have to go back and change all that stuff. And it takes a tremendous amount of time to do that. So it's really better to bite the bullet. And if you have to, you know, get a friends and family loan or bank loan and make a little bit of an investment up front, because I guarantee you it's going to save you money in the long run.
That's great advice. Now, Philip, let's now talk a little bit about your business. What year did you start VearHow?
I started it in about 2015, I would say. So about 3 years ago.
Okay. And let's talk a little bit about your own experience building your business, and in particular, revenue models. What do you find that has worked really well to build consistent, stable revenue?
I am the poster boy for the success of content marketing. I was an early convert to it. As I moved out of my large agency, large corporate life, I was a neophyte in the world of personal branding, to be honest. And, you know, I hadn't been doing a lot of digital. So, you know, I had to get up to speed very quickly on content marketing, on, you know, email marketing, on content development. And one of the first things I did was realize that building an email list is very important. So I started a email newsletter, and I have a newsletter that's called Brand Muse, and it comes out every 2 weeks and has come out every 2 weeks for about 2.5 years. And in that, I share some thoughts and insights on design and entrepreneurship with people who sign up to my email list. And that is a way to stay front and center and in people's feed and stay top of mind, which is the most important thing about branding. And it was also a way for me to, you know, put the content and thoughts and ideas I had out into the world and to let people know that I was a thought leader and that I had points of view and that I was connected and, you know, I could share trends and insights with them in the marketplace that they may not be able to find in other places. So doing that has been really fabulous, and it's given me a platform for, you know, pontificating about what turns me on. And the other aspect of that is about 9 months after that, I started a YouTube channel. And as you mentioned in the introduction, you know, I have about 125,000 followers. Now, I would say at this point, 75% of my new business comes directly from my YouTube channel. So I have over 100 videos up there now. I've been publishing a video a week for over 2 years, and I share, you know, insights and processes and methodologies and inspiration on entrepreneurship and design and branding and marketing. And I have given freely, you know, a tremendous amount of information that I, you know, have learned and developed and utilized throughout my career. And I've given it out very freely. And that has proven to be incredibly popular on the YouTube platform and has, you know, garnered me a lot of attention. It's, as I said, it's driving, you know, people go on YouTube and they see, you know, they do a search for, you know, brand positioning, or they do a search for social media marketing, and a video of mine will come up and they'll watch it. All my videos are very short. They're generally less than 10 minutes, more like 5 or 6. So it's not a big time commitment. and I put a tremendous amount of information out in that short period of time. And people are kind of, they tend to be amazed, and they will, after watching a couple of my videos, they'll make a few comments in the comment section, and then they'll send me an email and say, I really need you to help me with X. And so giving that content out for free with no, expectation of return. And when I first started out, I had zero expectation of return. It has proven to be, very, very good for my business. And it's a very stable new business model for me. And because of the viewership that I have now as well, my advertising revenue from the ads that are run on my YouTube videos also provides me with income every month. So doing those things, engaging in content development, my newsletter every 2 weeks, a video every week, and doing that absolutely consistently, like a job, like never missing a week, has proven to be very, very successful in building my business.
Right. So it brings consistent lead generation and recurring revenue, both.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. And how long would you say it took until you started to see an amount of new leads coming as a result of your content generation that made you feel like it was worthwhile to do the content creation?
I would say probably about a year. And, content generation is not for the meek. It is a long game, and it takes a lot of commitment, a lot of time, and a lot of energy. It's not like, it's not like a Google AdWord. It's not like a Facebook ad that's going to drive a bump in your prospects. It is, developing a evergreen content library that is going to live on the interwebs until you're 6 feet under. And the wonderful thing about it is that it yields compound interest. The more you put into it, the more you get out of it. But like I said, it's a long game, and you really have to show up consistently with strong content and also engage heavily with your audience in order for it to bear that fruit. And that means that, there are not a lot of people who can do that, who either want to, who feel like they have, the ideas or the content, concepts or insights that they want to share with people, or they're fearful, like you said at the beginning, they're fearful of exposing themselves. So whether exposing themselves on a podcast or even in Instagram photos or in, God forbid, video, because a lot of people are afraid of video, they're afraid to get started. Because once you get started, once you flip the switch, you've got to show up consistently. Because if, as you build an audience, your audience will expect you to show up when you say you're going to show up. And if you don't, they're going to go elsewhere. And showing up consistently and being in people's feed, I have this new phrase I'm beating the drum about. It's like out of feed, out of mind. It's like you have to show up in people's feed consistently. And if you do, and if you do so with brand design elements that are incredibly consistent, so people can start recognizing you visually as you show up, then it will eventually, build your business. But it takes an investment on your end.
Yeah, certainly as the host of a podcast where we've produced over 400 episodes in the last 4 years, I can agree with you that this is not for the faint of heart.
Absolutely. But I'm sure that in 400 episodes, you have now built an incredible library of amazing content that if you stopped right now and just maintained, promoting it, it will drive, revenue and interest and engagement from your audience for a long time. And I think that's, what you've been doing is amazing. 412 episodes is incredible.
Philip, whom do you know personally who's been really successful at smashing plateaus?
Well, I started an interview series on my YouTube channel and Brand Muse interview series, and I've been interviewing leaders in design and marketing and entrepreneurship. And in doing that, I've started to get to know some of my idols. And I'll mention two. One is probably pretty known, well known to many of your viewers, and her name is now Amy Landino. It used to be Amy Schmidauer. She used to have a YouTube channel called Sexy Savvy Social and has written a book called Vlog Like a Boss, which is an excellent book for anybody who's interested in getting into video production. And she's been amazing. I think one of the things that's most interesting about my interview with her is that her watching her evolution from what she's offered and how she's evolved her business over time has been really fascinating. She started off as a very social media focused personality. Then she gave a very video vlogging focused personality. And now she is moving into the lifestyle arena, which is less marketing and more about, you know, a personal fulfillment. And that, I think, is a lesson. It's a lesson to all of the entrepreneurs and business people out there is that, and this is something I want to mention, David, you were talking about like the fear of starting. One of the things I hear a lot is people say, you know, I don't know if what I want to say now is what I'm going to want to say forever. I don't know if, you know, what I want to do now is the thing I'm going to want to do for the rest of my life. And the thing is that everybody changes, everybody evolves, and you have to just start. Because you know, as you do something over time, it will evolve. And the second example I wanted to mention was a guy named Lee Jackson, who has an agency in the UK called Angled Crown. They're a WordPress development agency. He used to have, I interviewed him for my Brand Muse interview series. That video is on my channel if anyone wants to watch it. He had a podcast called WordPress Innovators. And he did, you know, a sizable number of episodes around WordPress, and it was all WordPress focused. And after a while, he found that to be a little constrictive. And he also started to get more agency people who were listening to it, but were asking deeper, broader questions that he wanted to address. So he actually changed his podcast to be called the Agency Trailblazer Podcast, which is now more about running an agency. He covers WordPress stuff, but it's in a much kind of broader spectrum. And he's a great guy, great thinker, very creative. And he is another, you know, poster boy of great content development. He's now developed a Facebook community called the Agency Trailblazer Facebook community. And he's, you know, he's out there shaking it. He's out there giving away amazing value for free. And he's the kind of person who, you know, I think everyone should emulate.
No, those are great examples. Philip, what can we look forward to in the near future from you? What's coming up?
Well, as I said, I've been doing, you know, my newsletter and my YouTube channel. If anyone wants to subscribe to my newsletter, they could go to philipvandusen.com/muse, M-U-S-E, and subscribe to my newsletter there. Or you can go to YouTube and search my name, Philip Van Dusen, and subscribe to my channel. I've been, as I said, putting out a video every week, continuing to do that. But now I'm going to start to engage a little deeper with that. And I'm going to start doing some YouTube Live and possibly some Facebook Live on my Verhal Brand Design Facebook page. So starting to engage in a more direct way with my community. That's one of the things that I wanted to mention. I know I'm going on a little bit, but one of the things I wanted to mention was that when you get into content development, you also have to invest in engaging with your audience. So I've received, you know, well over 100,000 comments on my YouTube channel, and I've answered every single one, whether it's even just a thanks or whether it's, you know, a deeper response or a question or more of a conversation. But I've engaged deeply with my audience, and that's how I've built an audience, because people know that I care and that I will continue to give a deeper level of value if they engage. And so that's one of the things I wanted to do as I get more into kind of live interaction with the community and doing YouTube Lives, is to start, you know, answering and engaging in a more intimate way. Because I think that's really what it's about. It's really about breaking down barriers so people have access to you.
Exactly. So speaking of engaging, do you have an engaging free gift that you'd like to offer our audience?
Sure. If people sign up for my newsletter, the first, you know, confirmation email that you're going to get is a free PDF that's called The 9 Brand Design Elements You Absolutely Positively Need. And it's a survey of 9 of the key brand assets that any brand needs to launch. and I describe them in a very clean, concise way, and you can do a little spot check and see whether you have those boxes ticked for your own brand. And if you don't, hit me up at philipvandusen.com.
Sounds great. And are there any other links you want to mention where people can check you out or follow you?
No, I think I'm good. My newsletter, my YouTube channel, and my website, that's where I can be found.
Sounds great. Well, Philip, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau and sharing your insights.
Thank you so much, David. I appreciate your inviting me back.
When you visit the Smashing the Plateau website at smashingtheplateau.com, you'll find a summary of each episode along with the links we mention on the show. Today, we discussed the biggest branding mistakes small businesses make, how to overcome the fear of investing in branding, and how Philip VanDusen built consistent, stable revenue for his branding business. We've produced over 400 episodes of plateau-smashing discussions with top business leaders. We want to hear from you. Send me your questions and comments directly. That's david@smashingtheplateau.com. Remember to subscribe on whatever platform you listen on and leave a review if you can. Thank you for taking the time to listen to our show. I'll see you on our next episode.